Our first lesson this morning is from the Hebrew Bible, the book of Exodus, chapter 16, verses 1 and 13 to 21. It may be found not on the page listed in your bulletin, but on pages 59 to 60 if you want to follow along. The whole congregation of the Israelites set out from Elim, and Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt. In the evening, quails came up and covered the camp, providing them with meat to eat. And in the morning, there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a fine, flaky substance, as fine as frost, on the ground. When the Israelites saw it, they said to one another, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Gather as much of it as each of you needs, an omer to a person, according to the number of persons, all providing for those in their own tents." The Israelites did so, some gathering more, some less. But when they measured it with an omer, those who gathered much had nothing over, and those who gathered little had no shortage. They gathered as much as each of them needed. But they did not listen to Moses. Some left part of it until morning, and it bred worms and became foul, and Moses was angry with them. Morning by morning, they gathered it, as much as each needed. But when the sun grew hot, it melted. The word of the Lord.
Our gospel passage this morning comes from the book of Luke, chapter 3, verses 10 through 14. This is when John the Baptist is preaching in the wilderness before Jesus' ministry begins. The crowds asked John the Baptist, "What then should we do?" In reply, he said to them, "Whoever has two coats must share with anyone who has none, and whoever has food must do likewise." Even tax collectors came to be baptized, and they asked him, "Teacher, what should we do?" He said to them, "Collect no more than the amount prescribed to you." Soldiers also asked, "And we, what should we do?" And he said to them, "Do not extort money from anyone by threats or false accusation, but be satisfied with your wages." Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. We continue this morning with our sermon series on being God's peculiar people. That is, people who are God's own, but who are asked to sometimes do peculiar, maybe countercultural things as we seek to follow that God. Our Hebrew Bible passage this morning is a lesson in less over more, and being invited to choose less over more. God had recently delivered the Israelites from slavery in Egypt and was bringing them through the desert to the land that God had promised to their ancestors. Along the way, though, they got hungry, and they got thirsty, and they began to accuse Moses and God of having freed them just to leave them to die in the desert. Everything was out of their control, in other words, and they panicked. Now, God wasn't about to let God's people perish in the wilderness, though. God provided flocks of quail every day for them to eat. In another part of the story, we learn that God brought water out of a rock to slake their thirst. And then God created the Bible's first pun to feed them bread. Each morning, the dew covering the ground would disappear to be replaced by a coating of flaky white stuff that could be made into cakes that tasted of honey. "What's this?" the people asked, or "mon" in Hebrew, which became manna in English. So despite not being able to figure out what it was, the Israelites survived by eating, "Huh? What's this stuff?" for 40 years. And that is the Bible's first pun. The interesting thing about it, though, is that God would give them enough, what's this, for each day, and a double portion on Friday, so they would have enough to avoid working on the Sabbath the next day. Those who hoarded, thinking to protect themselves against a time when there might not be enough, found that the extra they had set aside turned maggoty and rotten. It was divine reinforcement of the idea that with God, there will always be enough. Do you notice it took them 40 years to learn that lesson? It's a tough one. Just like last week's choosing peace over worry, we all know that hoarding and keeping extra possessions aren't the key to happiness. But we also live in a society so completely enmeshed with consumerism that we've become blind to how inundated we are with excess, how truly too much surrounds us everywhere, and how we've been trained by savvy advertisers to desire more, more, more. The Israelites in the desert who didn't have internet or billboards or radio announcements could have gotten so worried about what was going to come the next day. We are even 1,000 times more saturated with the message that we don't have enough. We might run out. We need more things. It's not that we're weak or easily duped people with no willpower. It's that we are human. And we evolved to accumulate against the possibility of hard times so that when there was a famine, we would have enough to eat. And in a world of material abundance or superabundance even, we don't always recognize how we use things to make ourselves feel better or dull our dissatisfactions or enhance our status or insulate ourselves against worry and want. Think for a moment about the last item you bought on Amazon or on some other online service or in a catalog. I want you to stop and picture it. Either when you clicked that one-click buy button they have that makes it so easy, or when it delivered almost instantly, maybe the next day, on your doorstep. Was it something that you really, truly needed? Not something you could have put off? Not something you could have borrowed or used what you already had for that same need or just plain gone without? Or think about the last time you went to the grocery store. Did you walk out with only what was on your list? Or did you succumb to the constant barrage of coupons and two-for-one deals and try this new item? I don't know about you, but Trader Joe's try this stand in the back corner of their store always gets me. And I come out with like two extra bags of things, walking home with hurt shoulders, sore shoulders, because I came home with more than I thought I would. And the cashiers at Trader Joe's confirm that this is a very common occurrence there. Those items, we think they're going to make our lives easier, or that it's a healthier version, and so we will get into better shape by eating it or buying it. We'll have more energy. We'll even extend our lives, right? That's the message that we're told. Or what about the last time that you bought something to make yourself feel more professional for your role at work, or to project an image that you're athletic, you've got the right gear to do the activity, or that you're eco-savvy? Maybe you've bought a whole pack of paper straws, or maybe you've bought reusable utensils to bring with you to work. Or when's the last time you bought something to convey the image that you're a conscious and with it parent? Last class you purchased for your kid, maybe. Author and pastor Joshua Becker tells the story of the moment that he realized his family's stuff was getting in the way of everything that truly mattered. It was a beautiful Memorial Day weekend in Vermont, and Joshua had planned to spend it cleaning out the garage with the help of his young son. He says, looking back, he doesn't know why he thought that his five-year-old son would want to help clean out the garage, but I think we're all optimists when it comes to these sorts of projects. And amidst the piles of boxes and tools and bikes and other stuff, his son soon found a bin of toys he hadn't seen in a few months, and he headed to the backyard to play wiffle ball. On his way, he stopped. "Will you play with me, Dad?" He asked it with a hopeful expression on his face, but his dad said, "Sorry, buddy, I can't. But we can play as soon as I finish, I promise." Have you ever said those words? I know I have. His son kept appearing periodically from the backyard to try to convince Joshua to play with him, but each time his dad would tell him, "I'm almost done." But as he sorted and organized and cleaned and reshuffled their garage's worth of extra possessions, he began to realize that there was a lot more than a few hours of work there. A neighbor recognized his frustration. "Ah, the joys of home ownership," she commiserated. "Well, you know what they say," said Joshua, "the more stuff you own, the more your stuff owns you." "Yeah," said the neighbor, "that's why my daughter keeps telling me I don't need to own all this stuff." Does anyone here have an adult child who's told them that they should get rid of some of the excess stuff that they have? Yeah. Her words were a complete and total epiphany for Joshua. "The sentence reverberated in my mind," he said, "as I turned to look at the fruits of my morning labor, a large pile of dirty and dusty possessions stacked in my driveway. Suddenly, out of the corner of my eye, I noticed my son, alone in the backyard, still playing by himself. I already knew that possessions don't equal happiness. Doesn't everybody? At least we profess to know that our things won't bring us true satisfaction. But in that moment, as I surveyed the pile of stuff in my driveway, another realization came to me. Not only are my possessions not bringing me happiness, they're actually distracting me from the things that do make me happy. I ran inside the house and found my wife, still trying to catch my breath. I said, "Kim, you'll never guess what just happened. June said we don't need to own all our stuff." It's funny, the Messiah is coming, and the way that John the Baptist, the one sent to smooth the way for the Messiah, this God with us, John the Baptist is telling people to prepare by giving away their extra and learning to be content with what they have. Really? Like sharing a superfluous coat or the food stored up in the pantry is what prepares us for Jesus' appearance on this earth? Not being just or compassionate or forgiving, it's getting rid of your extra stuff. I think Marie Kondo devotees will be very happy to hear that they're actually preparing for the second coming of Jesus. "If you have two coats," says John, "give one away." The implication is that one coat is enough. That one is all we need if we're trying to keep warm. If you are wearing one coat to keep out the cold, you literally cannot use a second coat. It won't fit over the first coat. You will not be any warmer for owning an extra sitting in your closet, so share the opportunity to be warm with someone who is coatless. Yet I bet we would be hard-pressed to find someone in this congregation who owns only one outer layer meant to keep us insulated from cold weather. And I count myself among those ranks because even though I have a blog dedicated to purposely trying to own fewer clothes, when I went through my closet to count how many coats or coat-like outer layers I own, I counted 6. All with a distinct purpose or style or season, of course, but still, 6 coats for one body. I could stay warm with just one, and yet I have 6. What would it be like to live with just one coat? What kind of trust does it take to live like that? Or to only buy what you need for each meal instead of loading up on multi-packs at Costco or BJ's? Or to be satisfied with our wages when we're working a job that gives us enough? Or to run a business not to create endless profit, but to generate just what it takes to support ourselves and our employees? The thing is, if we can give away our excess and keep only what we truly need, then instead of our lives being underlaid by a false sense of security or buffered by the meaning that we assign to our possessions, Our lives will be directly plugged into trust in God. Our lives will be undergirded with true appreciation for what we have. And just like when we give up worry, as we talked about last week, our time and our resources and energy will be freed up for what really matters: justice and compassion and forgiveness, those things that prepare the way for the coming of God among us. See, John the Baptist isn't trying to get us to declutter our closets so much as he's telling us to practice the art of enough. And he's suggesting that we probably need less to get to that enough than we think we do. And if we can practice that art of enough, that art of less than we think we need, then our extra can make the world a warmer, fuller, more just place. And our attention can be directed towards making it so. Each night I read a story out of a family storybook Bible for my daughter Davy, who is 5, and the other night we got to the Ten Commandments. And she understood about not stealing and not killing people, but she didn't know what it meant not to covet. And so I had to try to explain the feeling of wanting something that you don't already have and that you don't need. It was a tricky exercise. Sort of like, why would you want something more than what is already in front of you? Why wouldn't your attention be directed to the present moment and what is already in your hands? But Davy, even though she's only 5, got it right away. She said, oh, it's like those shirts with the sequins on them. Have y'all seen those shirts, mostly that kids wear? I wish they made them for adults, but it's sequins that are 2 colors, and if you brush down this way, the dinosaur or the soccer ball or the unicorn is 1 set of colors, and if you brush them up this way, it turns to a different set of colors. And she said, I want one of those so bad. I said, you know, it's okay to have that feeling. What matters is if what we choose to do with that feeling. And sometimes it's enough to just enjoy seeing those shirts, or you can ask someone if you can touch them because they feel pretty cool to touch, to enjoy that someone else has them that you get to see, but you don't have to own it. Next time we run into somebody with a sequin shirt, we'll see if that lesson stuck with Davy or not. But it occurred to me that when we choose less, when we choose to be content with enough, we become at home with ourselves. Not distracted by the thing that we want and how can we get it, and ooh, I just can't wait till I need to get my hands on that thing. We become attentive to the present moment and emotions we might otherwise mask with stuff. When we choose less, we choose to connect with others. The young child who's waiting to play with us, the neighbor in need, stranger we can help with our donations, or the cash freed up by not buying more things. And when we choose less, we choose to draw closer to God, the one we can trust to provide for us, and the one who knows that the less we are preoccupied by our things, by getting and maintaining them and replacing them, the more mental space we have for prayer and for praise. I want to close with a story by UCC pastor and singer-songwriter Brian Sergio. This is a song he wrote called Westbound on I-80. It's the Interstate 80 out in the Midwest. And most of it is kind of talking while he sings, so I'm not going to try to sing it because there's not much of a melody. But what happens is he's on a car trip with his family. And his kids are little, and they have little bladders, and so they have to pull over at the rest stop for them to use the bathroom. And while Brian's sitting there waiting for his kids to come back from the bathroom, he sees a homeless person, or someone he assumes is homeless, wearing tattered and old clothes, looking kind of scruffy around the edges, and he notices that his toes are poking out of his shoes. And then Brian hears this voice. I think it was the voice of God, he said. And it said, give the man your extra pair. And I thought, oh God, that's a crazy thing to do. Besides, how am I supposed to know if these thoughts are sent to me from you? And anyway, my only extra pair is my favorite New Balance running shoes. And then the same voice said something like, those will do. So as my kids got in the car, I laughed and thought, this is insane. So I turned the motor over and began to drive away, and I almost got to the highway when my heart stepped on the brakes. I said, there's something I forgot, you guys, just wait. And so I found that man and said, excuse me, sir, but you look down on your luck. And he said, yeah, I guess I am. Got an extra buck? And I said, yeah, I do, but here, try these shoes. And they fit just like a glove. And he said, God bless you. And I thought, God sure does. I don't think it's any coincidence that the lesson it took the Israelites 40 years to learn is the same lesson that will prepare us for the coming of God in the flesh. Choosing less, that we might all have more. Amen. As you go out into this world and into this week, I'm going to give you a little homework assignment, a little challenge. The next time you're tempted to buy something that you don't really need or that you wouldn't normally get at the grocery store, or the next time you see something in your house that you're not using anymore, but still in perfectly good shape, I want you to ask God to show you what to do with that, with the money that you save from not buying the thing, or with the object that you have. Ask God how you might use that to let other people know that God is walking this earth, God is among us, that there is joy and freedom to be found in sharing and in pursuing enough. And see what it feels like to have a little less this week so that somebody else might have enough. Go in peace.